Welcome to another episode of One Door at a Time, coming to you live from NAPSE here in New Orleans. NOLA is our way of connecting people to the work, really about education and the people who are doing the work. As usual, we want to give our shout outs and appreciation to our sponsor, Atlas Restaurant Groups, 32 restaurants across the greater Baltimore area. Thank you so much, Atlas Restaurant Group, for seeing the vision and supporting us throughout the time. Since the very beginning, I have an unbelievable guest, not just a partner district, but a friend who believed and gave me an opportunity early on. Dr. Josh Tallison from eCourse. eCourse is family. eCourse Public Schools, right outside of Detroit. It's a hidden gem. So much history there. To all those who tuned in to BMF, that's where BMF is from, right?
Yeah.
Josh, thank you, one, for being on the show.
Most definitely. Thank you.
Thank you for believing in it when Concentric wasn't even Concentric. The shit was just David. And just, you know, molding the opportunity to serve, build, grind. So tell me about your journey. Like,
sure.
How did you become superintendent?
Well, first, thank you for the opportunity to have some dialogue with
Absolutely.
Your brother. I started off as an educator. Background was in history education and special mm-hmm. education. And a principal of mine said, you know, have you ever thought about going into administration? I never thought I would even go that track. But I went to a workshop over the summer that I didn't want to go to in uh-huh. Rochester Hills.
And oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I did a vignette and act like I was a superintendent. And it's funny, the superintendent was there and actually said, I'm the superintendent of Rochester. And he invited me to interview for assistant principal job. Administration certification. I was yep. 26 years old, so I got hired, and I was like the only African American
in Rochester Hills.
Yeah, that's my first start on assistant principal.
Wow!
And then I went on there for four years. Then I became a principal in Oak Park School District, and okay. then in the Southfield Public Schools. Then I got my first superintendency in the Beecher Community School District outside of Flint, Michigan.
Okay,
I was there for 7 years. We were the first school district in the state of Michigan to go to a balanced calendar, which some people call year-round schooling.
Gap.
So. Did a lot of great things there. So being there 7 years, but I'm from the Metro Detroit area.
Okay.
I tired of commuting that hour every day yes. for 7 years, and the eCourse job came up. And actually, I really didn't know about eCourse right
mm-hmm.
at all. But then I interviewed and then got the eCourse position, and I've been there for the last 7 years. So I'm actually the longest continuous serving African American superintendent in the state of Michigan.
I didn't know that.
I'm on year 14. Yeah, other people have started before me, but they stopped being superintendents, then came back and stuff like that. So that's where I've been in that situation. eCourse has been a very unique place. It's been a great place because
it's amazing.
As in a smaller district, you can see the fruits of your labor quicker, and you see the efforts that you put in manifest themselves a lot easier, stuff like that. So, and you guys have been part of that journey as well, helping with the attendance and the wraparound service, especially during COVID when we had
yes.
so much displacement. You guys really did a great job of helping us connect the families and see what they need and things of that nature. So
I want to talk to you about that, but take me growing up. You're from Detroit, right?
Yeah, born and raised. West side of Detroit, Jerry Road and Dexter.
Talk about, because we're around the same age,
yeah.
40s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Without giving too much specificity, what was it like growing up in the Detroit that you knew, right? Growing up to where it is now, and how did those things shape you?
I think it shaped me a lot, because growing up, like when I was a kid, you know, you don't know you're poor until somebody else tell you you're poor.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. So I didn't know I came from the hood or the whatever until I went to college. You know what I'm saying? Because then when I met people from, I went to Kentucky State University, so I met other people from Detroit, and you tell them where you're from, they're like, oh.
Yep.
I'm like, what's going on? Everything like that. But we were like, my neighborhood, you know, it was different because like the gangsters and stuff like that saw stuff in younger people, and they wouldn't
yeah.
let you get involved. You know what I'm saying? So they would like steer you away when anything was about to take down. Okay, Josh, time for you to go
mm-hmm. yep.
or whatever, stuff like that. So it was good. But I had great teachers, and that's why I'm such a proponent of excellent teachers. I didn't go to Cass Tech or any of
Where'd you go?
I went to Northwestern High School, which is a
you great. You went to Northwestern?
School. Yeah. I went there. We had a great school, but it wasn't like one of the magnet schools. But we had great teachers, and that kind of shaped my beliefs in education and prepared me for college very well.
So you came up all the way through public schools?
Yeah, DPS. Yep, Detroit Public Schools, kindergarten to 12th grade.
Northwestern.
Yep, yep. Northwestern. And the difference today, I believe, is not that the sense of community is kind of not in the neighborhoods. If I could be honest, it's just different. And it might be just societal things. Like, you don't know your neighbors and stuff like that. It's different. Like, everybody in the neighborhood knew each other. You know what I'm saying? Or so if you got in trouble, they beat you home before you could get settled on yourself. So I think that kind of difference, but I think it also shaped me as an educator because I know I'm where I am because I had good teachers and I had good educational systems behind me. So when I don't see that at any environment I am, I'm going to challenge it and make sure it doesn't take place because I know I'm only where I am because of quality teaching and stuff like that.
So you learn that growing up in Detroit, going through DPS, you get to Kentucky State, HBCU, shout out.
Yep.
How did Kentucky State shape you?
Oh, God. It shaped me so much. It gave me so much confidence. It prepared me for the real world, and I could conquer anything. One thing about HBCUs in general, they just give you there's a different feel. Your professors know you. Yeah. You know, I was funny. I played football there, and the dean of the department thought I was in a class that they had in education. Mm-hmm. And told the football coach that I was missing class. I didn't even have a class. But that's how much they were on us and stuff like that. But it gave me so much confidence in the undergirding of belief in yourself. And quite honestly, when I went to grad school, I graduated and went right to grad school at University of Cincinnati.
Oh, did
I? And I was bored in grad school because for what K-State taught me in the education department. You know what I'm saying? So I was not even.
So you went through K-State in the ed department?
Yep. Education. I was history education major, and then I got to my master's in special education. And literally, I graduated in May 13th, and I was in grad school May 29th. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I went straight through, and because they gave me a full ride and everything like that. So in Cincinnati, and then Cincinnati, I think I really didn't want to grow up because I didn't want to get a real job yet because they paid for everything, and I was like doing a little teaching on the side or whatever. But
were you in Cincinnati?
Yeah, I was in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati is like an hour from K-State. So people didn't think I graduated because I was there. I was back on campus every weekend for the first year. Yeah, and stuff like that.
So you're a member of Alpha Phi Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
Why A Phi A? Because I always ask, like, so I'm a newt. That's because my history department chair, you know what I mean? Like, the chair was a newt. I mean, the chair was an alpha.
Okay.
My history professor who I had classes with because we were such a small department, we had 10 people who were majors. And he was just always constantly in my ear. Why A Phi A?
You know what? I just think they were the most prominent group on campus when I was there. And as people always ask me that, it was just something different about them, you know?
Yeah.
And like I said, HBCU, Greekdom is a very big thing.
Yes.
And they stand out. So as looking at all of them, I just saw myself as an alpha, you know what I'm saying? Yes. And they fit me and things that in my chapter, Beta Mu, Strongheart chapter there, it's just been a part of my life since then. Like, I can go down there now and I know the undergrad bros and stuff like that. So it's just that familiarity and stuff like that. But it was just, Alpha was for me. Now, if I was on a different campus, it might be a different story. It's campus by campus.
And that's exactly. And I tell people, like, my indoctrination or even introduction to frat life was because he was my professor and I had him semester after semester after semester. At that time, Sigmas were suspended, Kappas were suspended, Alphas were suspended. The only active organization were Qs. Now, they ran the yard, but they were only the only people on the yard. and you start kind of figure out, like, what makes sense.
What fits you.
And I always say, in complete transparency, if it wasn't KSI, it would have been A5A.
I got you.
Just because, I mean, from a history perspective, it was Du Bois.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's Thurgood Marshall.
Yeah, almost done.
You know what I mean? Dr. Wachuku, who was our department chair, rest in peace. And it's all about that. But then you start connecting with people on campus.
Exactly.
So now you're in Cincinnati. You come out of Cincinnati. What made you, like, how did you come back to the Detroit area and stuff like that?
Detroit was always home. I know I was going to end up back in Detroit. Detroit was always home. I didn't want to live anywhere. I was a mama boy. You know, my mama there. I'm the youngest of five. So, like, I've been in Kentucky for 4 years. I was in Cincinnati for 2 years. I know I was going to end up being in Detroit. So, after I graduated, I just came back home. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to make a difference. I taught in DPS. For like a year and a half.
So you started in DPS?
Yeah, I started for a year and a half.
Is this one that were in receivership?
No, that was way before then. That was okay. They I didn't think they really, this is like 97. So they weren't involved in anything like that. So I had at Murray Wright High School for a year and a half.
But then you were at Murray Wright?
Yep. Then I went to Southfield because I found out they was making a whole lot more money.
Right across.
So yep. Then I've been there. And now then I started my teaching career in Southfield. I was in Southfield after I went to Detroit.
Yep. So I remember like my first time in Detroit. It was 2010. I catch a flight in and there's snow on the ground. And it's snowing. And I'm telling my mentor, who's an alpha, Dr. Rabowski, and I'm like, look, I'm coming here, but I think it's going to be, classes are going to be canceled because there's snow on the ground and it's snowing. I go up to Southeastern at the time and I see kids and I'm like, yo, like, I thought school's not closed. And they were like, yeah, you're not from here, are you? I was like, no, but it was snow on top of snow.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what growing up, particularly in Detroit, like, what did you see as a student that has stuck with you today?
I think the expectations were very high from our teachers.
When you were coming up?
When I was coming
up. Okay.
No matter where you came from, your neighborhood, your background, it was no excuse. They expected excellence from us, you know what I'm saying? And they didn't waver, you know what I'm saying? Because I think that's the biggest thing that I really, going through elementary, middle, high school, I had good teachers all the way through who challenged you. And if they saw something in you, they made sure that you were focused. They made sure you did your stuff and they were on you. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, and I was in the honors track. It was going to Omega track back in, I don't know. Why they call it Omega group. You know what I'm saying? But we were in an honors track. So when I was around like-minded students in the honors track too, we kind of went together. Now that I think about it, we kind of were a cohort, you know, so from ninth grade all the way to 12th grade. You know what I'm saying? And so we always had good teachers and, you know, and they really held the bar and we held the bar with each other, you know what I'm saying? So we made sure each other did the homework or stuff like that. So it was like, that was that collegiality, even at a younger age in high school, that really kind of galvanized my thought processes and stuff like that.
So you leave DPS, you go to Southfield.
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference then? Because if people don't know Southfield, I mean, that was historically, if you could make it, it was affluent.
Probably the first affluent black community. It was the first. If you had money, you lived in Southfield back in the day. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you were African American and you lived in Southfield in the 80s and 90s, you made it. You know what I'm saying? So that was like two family incomes, nice homes, and you know what I'm saying? So, but the resources were there. And at that time, Southfield was probably one of the highest, like the third highest in the state of Michigan financially in regards to per pupil. So teachers made good money there.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Teachers made so much good money, they kind of didn't want to go to administration because it wasn't really a big jump for them. The administrators made good money too. So Southfield was really different. Like in Detroit, you had to like you get a ream of paper for the month for your class. Southfield,
and you got to make it work.
Yeah, Southfield, you guys had a room, get all the paper you want. It was like going from the half to the have nots. You know,
what were some of the lessons that you learned from your time in Southfield?
Excellence requires you to give your best no matter where you are at all times. No matter who you're in front of, it was an expectation at that time. And I think it's still there that you gave your best to the students that were in front of you.
Absolutely.
And the crazy thing was they didn't want Detroit kids there. Like, now how? There was no school of choice back then.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to ask you. There was no school.
And they had, like, truancy officers who would follow kids home and make sure they
live. Like, where you live.
Like, because the property values there were, the taxes were high. You know what I'm saying? So they're like, okay, if you're coming out here, you need to be a resident. And I remember even as a teacher, the school district found out a kid, like, and I was at elementary school my first year, and I went to the middle school. It was literally the last week of school, and they found out a kid didn't live in Southfield. They kicked him out. Literally, like, the last day of school was Friday. It was on Monday. I'm like, y'all really gonna kick this kid out? This Monday? That's how serious they took it. You know what I'm saying? They literally would have, like, truancy officers following buses home to make sure you live where you lived at. So, but yeah, Southfield really gave me a good foundation in regards to what excellence looks like.
So now you're going into administration. Mm-hmm. When was there a turning point or a tipping point where you like, okay, I can be a soup. I know I can do this.
I never wanted to be a superintendent. But my mentor, Dr. Wanda Cook Robinson, kind of made me go explore.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Wanda hired me. And she made me go to the train. I didn't want to, like, first of all, I didn't think I wanted to be an administrator. I never wanted any of it. You know what I'm saying? Too. Yeah. Then I saw people doing it. I'm like, okay, it's not brain surgery. You know what I'm saying? So, so went to the superintendent training academy in Michigan of 2009-10. It was called Michigan Leadership Institute. And they were probably the premier superintendent training grounds, and they did a lot of the searches and stuff like that. So did that in 2010, finished that. And then I had my first interview as Westwood Heights in Wayne County. I was a finalist there. And you know what I'm saying?
They had something called Westwood Heights now?
Yeah, it's still there. That's where Styles Simmons is.
Oh, yes. Styles, yes.
Yep. Yeah, so I was the finalist there. Didn't get the job. Then I knew I didn't want to be a superintendent because I didn't want to go through the interview process again. Because there's no grand notion of coming in second place in the superintendent search. There's nothing honorable about you. Didn't get the job.
Yeah.
And then your business is all out. Your business is all out in the street and everything like that. So I interviewed there, was a finalist. The superintendent who was retiring wanted me, but then something happened with the board. Like Governor Granholm or something called the board member or something like that. So, okay, didn't get it or whatever. Then the Beecher job came open and I'm like, Beecher had like 7 superintendents in 8 years. It was craziness and stuff like that. So they asked me to interview. I'm like, I don't want to interview. I'm like, I just went through this. So they said, just go interview, bro. So I went to interview and then before I got on the freeway, they voted and said they would offer me the job.
Wow.
So I think all those things kind of just laid the groundwork and the foundation for my track in education and stuff like that. And then, like I said, being there for 7 years, making sure those type of things took place because it was similar demographics to my current district, high poverty rate, you know, different things of that nature. So, you know.
Was it primarily African-American?
African-American, you know. Because Beecher is not a city. It's like a neighborhood, quite honestly, inside of Flint. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's almost like.
Would it be like a Highland Park?
Yeah, that's a perfect example. Okay. So it's like a city within a city kind of thing. But it's not even it's a township. It's not even a city. But it's 4 miles or something like that. So
wow.
It's small.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What, from not being a soup to then being a soup, what was the first, what do you think is one of the first things you had to learn?
Board relationships.
Man.
It's board relationships.
You are like the 9th consecutive soup that has to say the same thing.
Because you don't know, as a principal, you don't deal with the board of education. Yeah. You might use ACM or something like that in a bigger district, the farther away you're from them and stuff like that. I had very limited interaction. Even Southfield, I knew because two of their kids went to my school, so that's why I knew the board members then. But the superintendent board relationship is the most paramount relationship you have because they're your bosses. And this superintendency is the only job where you have to tell your bosses what to do. You know what I'm saying? You got to tell them, no, you can't do this and stuff like that. And depending on what, they might not like that you're telling them no. You know what I'm saying? So it's the board relationship is probably the biggest learning curve. Mm-hmm. But I'm a people person. I'm interacting. It wasn't hard for me after I figured it out. But you also got to know in different districts, like in Beecher is different from E-Course because Flint is kind of country.
Okay.
And they are GM kind of centric where Greater Detroit is all the big three. And, you know, and then when you're in closer to a bigger city, the mindset's a different. Beecher is a small kind of country. So everybody lived there, ain't never left there. Everybody's a cousin. And, you know, so it's like more homogeneous stuff like that. So, you know, they had to be a board member at Beecher was like you were on the city council or like you were, but you ain't doing nothing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Just a school board member.
Yes.
So it's different in that regard. But the board relationship was the biggest curve I had to.
So then E-Course comes over.
Mm-hmm.
You get the E-Course job.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about how, to me, I'm partial to smaller districts. Mm-hmm. From a partnership or a vendor position. Mm-hmm. It's just, one, you and I are a text message away,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not, okay, get to my assistant.
Exactly.
And
the layers.
Blah, blah, yeah, all the layers. Like, and you've been there. Mm-hmm. You've outlived normally how long superintendents there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's so powerful? Because I know, from my opinion, what's so powerful about E-Course, but like, what's so compelling to you?
I think, once again, it's that small. Now, I know every kid in high school.
Yeah.
Like, I can go over there and just, I think one of the biggest things that I didn't like about being a superintendent is I was moved from kids. When I first became superintendent. So I lived at the schools. I missed the energy students bring.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So it's the same thing. Like now I go to the high school like every day for about an hour just to mess with people. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, just to have that interaction. So I think that's the beauty of it, of the smaller district that you can get that. You get to know the kids, you get to know the people and stuff like that. But also you get to see how your leadership matters and how you can transform things so you can see the tangible results quicker.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because it's different moving moving a small rock and then moving a boulder.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I think you see the impact of your work a lot deeper.
So now you've been there, you hit COVID. Uh-huh. And this is why I wanted, because you were one of the very first districts that I know.
Uh-huh.
And I remember just having conversation. You kept on saying, I think this is what I'm going to do.
Uh-huh.
There's no right or wrong answer. Uh-huh. But no one can say there's a right or wrong answer. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
Like how did you all come to that decision? Because you decided, okay, we're gonna go hybrid. Mm-hmm. We're gonna bring people back.
Yeah.
What went behind that thinking?
I just knew that we'd be doing the service. Mm-hmm. And it was all, and I hate to use the term, it would be child abuse almost to have those kids at home all day with some of those parents. Because it wasn't a safe place. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
In regards to just the environment. The mama mad at you that you there messing up her stories and her old man can't come over for milk of the day and whatever, you know, and they couldn't help the kids. So I knew we had to do something different. So it was never, the teachers didn't like it. I mean, you know, like you said, it was never right or wrong, but I'm so glad that we did our hybrid because we really would have been doing a disservice to our families having everybody at home doing a virtual, and we probably would never got nobody back.
No.
Because it was hard because, like, the bigger districts around us struggle getting people to come back to teach in person. So I was like, the union didn't like it, you know,
But you had courage, man.
Yeah.
I remember the comment, and he was like, look, I don't know, but this is what we're going to do.
And if it's right, it's right, wrong, wrong. And I think that's what leadership is about, making tough choices that, you know, and that you gotta make sure, you know what, I can be mad enough to say I made a mistake or was wrong. But I'm also going to say I'm going to make sure I do what I think was best for kids. So I think one of my hallmarks is I don't do what's best for adults. I do what's best for kids.
Right.
And when you do what's best for kids, it can inconvenience adults. You know what I'm saying? So I think leaning on those type of things really help make the decision. Because I never, like I said, you can believe what you wanted to have with COVID. And it was real.
Yeah.
I knew what we needed to do. We were safe. We were masked up. We had these humongous air filtration systems everywhere, hospital grades that don't even use no more. You know what I'm saying? So, but I just know we had to do it. And the byproducts is work because we've had like the highest third through eighth grade reading improvement and growth over the last 2 years. And it's because we didn't have a break. You can't tell me it isn't. You know what I'm saying? So everybody's trying to figure out how do we do it? And our enrollment has consistently increased about 15% every year and things of that nature. So I think all those things really, you know, made it what it was.
So you take the unprecedented step because it was unprecedented because mm-hmm. it was a novel situation. Mm-hmm. You bring them back 18 months kind of post-COVID or whatever the case, but what are you seeing from staff, because I felt like even where I had to grow from 20 people to 200 employees, mm-hmm. People don't want to work.
Yeah.
Man, right. And then they take off. Now it's, you know, I need mental health days and stuff like
that. Yeah. Yeah.
What do you see as the remnants post COVID?
I think you hit it on the head. People don't want to work. They're getting money to do nothing. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's a dexterity has been lost. People don't have the stamina and the dexterity for work and engagement is like this. So you're building to get back up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, like, you know, they were teaching for like 3 hours and getting paid for a full day.
And students are saying the same thing, right? Yeah. So when we're looking at it, right, staff don't have the stamina, mm-hmm. the academic stamina. So at first when we're doing visits, it's, tech divide.
Yeah.
I think districts did an amazing job. Your job did. Your district did in mitigating the barriers, right? Then it was transportation.
Yep.
People figured out transportation. Mm-hmm. Now as we're talking, they just don't have the academic stamina.
Yeah.
Like they want to tap out after like 2 hours.
Yeah, and they want to take off or, you know, like you go to any high school in the city, go look on Friday. You'll see like half the on staff ain't there. You know, so it's like it's a dexterity that's kind of lacking. And I don't know what we got to do to get it back. You know what I'm saying? Because it needs to come back because the kids going to come. The kids going to be there on Friday. If the teacher is there, you're babysitting, you're not teaching.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I think getting people back to that kind of dexterity is very, very important.
What's one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring superintendent?
Pick the right district. Don't search the job. Pick the job that's best for you. Because sometimes as aspiring superintendents, we just want to get that job, but it might not be a good fit for you in that position. And you may find, like for African-American superintendents specifically, we don't get a lot of second chances. You know, we don't get a lot of second chances. If you get fired, you may be deemed that you're just incompetent, where our Caucasian counterparts can mess up everything and find a job next day.
Oh, yeah, you know absolutely. So two or three times.
Exactly. And, you know, I know a superintendent, you know, a district got dissolved. It wasn't because of her. She inherited it.
Uh-huh.
She never got another job back because her name was associated to the dissolved district. You know what I'm saying? So I would say really do your research to make sure you're a good fit for the job you're searching for, you're trying to get. You know, and I would tell them, go to a board meeting when they don't know who you are.
Yeah.
See how they act on a regular basis, you know, because, you know, everybody got good when you got company in.
But absolutely. You
know, if it's online or if you can go.
I see Steve at Harper, Derek in River, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Elena mm-hmm. over at Ipsy, Barbara and Rush Henrietta. Mm-hmm. It's just, y'all are so much happier than so many of the other law superintendents of a larger district.
Yeah, you got the biggest. You don't got the same headaches.
I see y'all smiling and excited about the job. Yeah. Man. And that's why I'm partial, man. Mm-hmm. I want to thank you. Thank you for stopping by.
Most definitely.
Thank you for the partnership. More importantly, thank you for the brotherhood.
Appreciate you,
brother. The family. It's one of those. It's not even a partner. It's a relationship. It's family. It's like, okay, this is what my family needs. And so, man, thank you.
I appreciate it.
And we'll continue doing the good work. I want to thank y'all for joining another episode of One Door at a Time, Concentric Educational Solutions podcast, where we bring superintendents and educators together, talk about the issues that they're facing and the issues that our students are facing. As always, we want to give a shout out to Atlas Restaurant Group. Thank you for sponsoring us. Thank you for growing our viewership. Thank you for the great food across the Baltimore area. And you can always catch us in all of our content in concentric.world. See you next time.